Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by GameFi.
Come get some.
Beware.
IGN Gamescoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne.
Who's this?
Well, Sam, making his first Gamescoop appearance is Ryan Quintal, who's been here with IGN for a little bit. He's a product designer.
Yes.
Surely to be on the show many, many times in the years to come.
Well, Justin.
New permanent cast member.
The reason Ryan's here is because he's actually moving on from IGN next week. And he hit me up. He said he was a fan of the show and wanted to be on before he leaves.
Right on.
So welcome to the show.
And you have done a show yourself for a while.
You have your own podcast.
I do. I mean, and of course, this is now where I put the pressure on camera and say you're all welcome to come on it, right?
Ooh, okay.
Playwright cast. We pitch new video game crazy ideas every week.
Mm.
So. We do that on this show, too.
Yeah. It's true. And the listeners always do. Too.
Is it Playwright W-R-I-T-E?
Yes, it is. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, that's a really good idea for a podcast.
They call that a pun.
You should take it.
Pun.
In the biz, that's what we call it.
You're punishing me. What's your favorite game of all time, Ryan?
I think it's easy to say Super Mario World, but it might also be Mega Man X.
Mega Man X.
X.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Lucky for you, you're going to play
like those pastel Mega Man?
Yes, I like my Mega Man with lankier arms and legs.
Yeah.
You're going to jump on that... Mega Man X Legacy Collection?
Yes, and we might talk about that a little bit later, right?
What's that?
We might talk about some retro gaming a little bit later.
Sure, we might talk. We actually don't ever talk about retro gaming here on Games.
Oh, yeah, first time.
It's about new games.
We have a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Darksiders 3. We'll be sharing a little bit of what we've been playing lately. But first, Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Based in Kyoto, Japan.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them.
They have a hot new-ish video game console out called the Switch.
Yeah.
Been a rousing success.
It's like an electronic version of those cards they make.
Of the Hanafuda cards? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the cards with a touchscreen.
Yeah.
Every week on Thursday, usually, just a tidal wave of games are released on this console. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Daily.
I can see the tidal wave. It's usually a couple big games, one or two really obscure retro games, which I appreciate, and then just a whole mess of stuff you've never heard of.
You can't call it shovelware anymore, though, because it's digital only. You can't actually use
it. You couldn't actually shovel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the word for a digital shovelware?
But you know, shovelware is different, though, because shovelware was like licensed games a lot of the time. Like My Little Pony spinoffs and Pets Babies and stuff like that.
Where I'm going with this is that...
Indies are good.
There's already a lot of games coming out on the Switch every week.
Mm-hmm. How many, Damon?
Well, a lot. I even have today's list.
I was trying to set you up.
Well, it's I don't know. There's not an exact number. The point is, Nintendo wants 20 to 30 indie games released on the Switch every week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
That's a lot.
Since their store is so easy to navigate, there should be no problems.
That's another problem. Discoverability of the actual good games is a problem for Switch. Dude, I think, I don't know, it sounds like way too much. Here's what the situation already is today. Just today, along with Octopath Traveler and Captain Toad, out on the Nintendo Switch eShop today is stuff like Darts Up, Epic Loon, Philippix, Phil's Epic Adventure, Holy Potatoes, A Weapon Shop, Hunting Simulator, mm-hmm. Let's Sing 2018, Mugsters, Radio Hammer Station,
I take it
Red
back.
Hot
it
Ricochet,
is shovelware. I take
Super
it all back.
Destronaut DX, Super Volley Blast, Star Story, The Horizon Escape, The Moose Man, and Vertical Strike Endless Challenge.
Moose Man.
Half those games sound made up.
I know, but they're all today.
Justin, and do you think
Nintendo
this is
wants
because,
more?
This is because iOS can port really easily to the Switch, you think?
So that's what, it's really funny to me as someone that keeps a really close eye on mobile games and plays a lot of mobile games that a lot of games that are hitting the Switch and finding a second life and finding an audience for the first time are like 2-year-old games that were on the iPhone and iPad and Android earlier. And
Oceanhorn was one of them. Yeah,
I can completely understand and respect somebody that doesn't want to fiddle around with touchscreen controls. They want buttons. Like the Switch is perfect for it. So I'm not trying to say that I like these games before they were cool. Like the Switch is a really really wonderful platform for them. But in many instances, they're actually not new games.
Yeah,
we see a lot of stuff come out on mobile first, then make its way to Steam, and then make its way to Switch.
Mm.
But even like quality aside, even if all of these games were great, no one could keep up with them and play them all. So it's just too much. It's like,
yeah, it's never good for a story to cram it with too much stuff. I mean, that iOS store is already really difficult to use. So.
They look at what Apple ended up doing with the App Store, and they pulled out games as its own section. They had to redesign it recently to be so much more editorial focused, right? And say, hey, here's 5 games that you should check out, not here's 5 million games that you can check out.
Bring back the seal of quality is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, something like that. I think Nintendo has to invest in some sort of editorialization of these things or some sort of curation to say, hey, we know there's 1 million games. Here's 5 to check out right now.
What if there was a website that could just do that for
us? We can't keep up with all the games. We can't review all these games.
I was going to say, we can't do that. But, like, you know, Apple invested in that, right? And they hired many, many people away from places, you know, like IGN to play through these games and say, it's actually a real joy to navigate the iOS App Store now today because they have, you know, features and interviews with game creators and they curate lists of like, here are 10 of the most interesting games from Japan. Here are 10 interesting soccer games if you're into the World Cup right now. And, you know, Nintendo is years behind their thinking in that regard.
Yeah. That many games, it's not good for the gamers who can't even sort through it all. It's not good for the developers because their games just get lost.
There was a balance when we were getting like Oxenfree and Axiom Verge and like these kind of like bigger PC ports.
Yeah.
And like they're coming in such a cadence that we're like, didn't matter if I could keep up with them. I just was excited there was that many great games out there.
Yeah.
And that's why the gold rush is on actually because you hear these stories about like our game came out 2 years ago and it made 10 times more money on day one on Switch. Yeah. And that's still like kind of the case, but it feels like less and less so each day.
That happened recently with Shovel Knight, right? They said,
Hollow Knight.
Or Hollow Knight. They're making more money or something per sale than they ever have.
And we the other way to think about it is sort of the Steam system of they're the exact opposite of Apple, where Apple takes a really curated, hands-on, editorially minded approach, and Steam says, "Nah, man, put whatever game you want on our platform. We don't care." And they introduce systems, you know, user reviews and just automated methods and algorithms to say, based off the 500 games you've played, here's 10 more we think you might be interested in. Like, it's almost like Netflix now, where no one sees the same Netflix homepage. You see a homepage that's customized based off what you watch.
Yeah.
And Steam's like that now. When I go to Steam, it's not Steam.com, but, you know, whatever the
Steam-powered.
Steam-powered. I see a very different landing page than Sam would or than you would, Damon.
What an interesting mark of Nintendo's success right now.
Yeah.
That the shovelware is flocking back to their system.
I mean, that's what happened with
their
Wii.
Their biggest systems, DS and Wii, were just shoveled.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 90% shovelware, probably.
And so is the NES and Super NES.
Yeah. I mean, the point that I'm driving to is Nintendo's doing neither of these things. They're not taking an algorithmic, you know, system.
There's no recommendation like system. You bought this, so you might like this.
The eShop, like it is impossible to find a game that came out a month ago on the eShop.
You have to search.
For that game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a real problem.
You can barely even add friends, let alone like get suggestions from your friends.
Even simple stuff that like if I had 20 eShop friends, can I see who bought what? Like, you know, what's popular among my friends?
Yeah. We need Mike Pereira to tell us what's good.
Come on, Mike.
Mike Pereira's dropping the ball over there.
As a IGN person who's now at Nintendo.
Yeah. Writing the little news updates that you see up there.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. When you read that stuff, I'm like 100% Mike wrote that one.
Yeah. No, I love the Switch. Not bagging the Switch. I don't want it to become a flood of shovelware, and I do want it to sort of catch up with modern consoles and have a better recommendation and discoverability.
We'll talk about this later, but I played 3 indie games on it this weekend.
Yeah.
Did I hear you say that Treasure Tracker's out today?
Yes.
Woo choo choo!
All aboard!
Or is it tomorrow? It might be out Friday, because Octopath Traveler's out tomorrow.
Friday, and both those games.
Yeah,
I didn't play it on the Wii U, so I'm really excited.
It's really good.
I know.
I played it on the Wii U. But I'm going to play it again.
It's so much better on the Switch. It works so much.
Everything's better on the Switch. Yeah, I wanted to say when we said put everything on the Switch, 20 to 30 indie games a week isn't quite what we meant. But
a Treasure Tracker was.
Yeah, Treasure Tracker was.
100%.
All right, let's move on to Darksiders 3. We have a release date for this now. It's out this year. This is out November 27th. First of all,
where was it at E3?
It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't. They had announced ahead of time that they were skipping E3.
And that was one of the games we would like write articles about. Like, this is not at E3. Like, it was just known. I don't know why.
First of all, how are we feeling about Darksiders 3? Is anyone...
Well, I've played the heck out of the first two games because I wrote the strategy guide for both of them.
For both of them.
And I hate them.
Oh. What? Only because you wrote the guide or...
Yeah,
you...
mainly.
Yeah, okay.
And like, I really don't... I think it's like a generic Zelda clone.
Yeah, this is Zelda.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, they're right? So good, I think.
I really like the first one particularly.
Yeah,
I agree. They take themselves really seriously. That's the only thing that makes me a little bit annoyed with them.
Yeah, I agree with that. You hear so often, oh, this game reminds me of Zelda, and it's got those Zelda vibes to it, and I always end up feeling let down by those comparisons because none of them do it as well as Zelda does. And I feel like Darksiders is the best Zelda-like game, but that's not an actual Zelda game.
Sure.
I think it does it better than all the other copycats.
Wow. What are some other copycats? What are some other Zelda?
Beyond Good and Evil. Beyond Oasis.
Better than Beyond Good and Evil?
Tunic.
Alundra.
Alundra.
That's a good one.
Wow, that's like an isometric one.
Yeah. 3D Dot Game Heroes.
3D Dot Game Heroes. That's the game I want to come back.
Rygar
is not really a Zelda.
The NES one.
No.
Why not?
There's a lot of indie games. You know, there's like Blossom Tail on the Switch I played, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's Windhorn.
Oceanhorn.
Oceanhorn, yeah.
Ryan, did you play Darksiders 1 or 2?
I played 1 and 2 a bunch. I got the like pre-order bonus where you open a chest and a million things come out of it.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, 3 hasn't gotten me super excited.
New developer.
Yeah, new developer. They've been a little quiet about it.
Yeah.
We're covering it this month as part of IGN First. I think it looks cool. I'll give it a shot. Like I said, I really like the first one. Gave the second one a chance, but sort of...
I'm very surprised really to see the November release date.
Yeah.
It feels like, dude, release your game, you know... Well, you don't want to be on February 22nd, but like come out in like March.
That's the problem is like there's not really... If it's not this year, then there's not... You have to kind of go deep into 2019 to find... A safe zone, safe space.
And I'm sorry if I'm putting you on the spot. Maybe you don't know, Damon. Do you know who you're playing as in the third one now? You play
Fury.
Fury this time around. So you were
horsewoman.
Yeah, she has a whip, kind of like thick whip thing she uses. And then unfortunately, she has like the whole Bayonetta thing. So she has like high heels and stuff. And it's just like a little impractical. But she's also like a scary ghost. So maybe she can dress however she wants.
Probably.
And get away with it.
Yeah. That's really funny. I'm always a little bummed out when like there's games that people like and that sell, you know, decently well, but then just business reasons just causes them to kind of go away.
Yeah.
It's like you make Darksiders, people liked it, sold okay. You make Darksiders 2, people liked it, it sold okay. But then the company's bought and sold and shut down and it's just like outside of your control. It just feels a little unfair when like if something's well received and does well, it should get the opportunity to keep going.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see Darksiders get a second lease on life.
You just get a portal gun in the end of Darksiders 1. They just give you a portal gun.
You can only
use it on certain spots.
Well, like, I'm trying to remember.
Build in the portals to the, like the temple.
And it would have been out after Portal, right?
Yeah, it is after Portal. For sure.
Yeah.
And the second one is more open, remember? It was like kind of a arena, open areas.
The second one had numbers pop out when you hit things.
I like that.
And this one, I still can't quite tell where that's going to fall.
They've shown a lot of interior dungeon stuff, right? But I don't feel like I've seen the sort of...
I'm a little worried that the third one feels... I mean, it probably is lower budget, but I'm worried that it might feel a little bit lower budget.
How does the, movability seemed to be in this one. Like there was like a lot of like wall climbing in the previous games.
I've only seen combat and walking.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there was some in our first coverage, some like double jump swinging stuff happening as well, which seems cool.
Big fan of double jumps.
So a November 27th release date is going to put it. Here's where it's going to put it. Hitman 2 is November 13th. Mm-hmm. Fallout 76 is the 14th. Pokemon is 16th. Then it arrives on the 27th. So
just
if you want to like plan.
Yeah, that's actually not horrible. They did manage to kind of carve out, like you always think about November as just being insane. And it's sort of like, oddly enough, at the end of November, you know, there's a little bit of a gap. Like you don't have Smash till early December.
Afterwards,
you
have a week until Just Cause and then Smash is on.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's not the same crossover audience as Pokemon, but I'd be worried about Fallout.
There's no other Zelda-like in that time period. So.
No other sort of adventure. Like even Hitman, Fallout is kind of a different feeling Fallout game. So there's not really, like if you're just a traditional core gamer, like.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's share what we've been playing. Sam, you said you were playing 3 indie games on Switch? Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. Does Luminous count?
Yeah.
Luminous is an indie game?
Luminous. So I played that. I beat Oxenfree, and I started Axiom Verge.
Okay, so you mentioned Oxenfree before. What do you think now that you finished it? Now you wrapped it.
I think it's like a, you know, an interesting ending and stuff, and it was fine. I really want to play some more like Night in the Woods and some of the other story-based games.
I like Night in the Woods so much more.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to hear. So I'll definitely check that out next. I liked how it had multiple endings, from what I could tell. I thought that was cool.
I haven't played either one. Is Night in the Woods more of a game than Oxenfree?
It's just walking and talking.
Okay.
But the dialogue in Oxenfree is so fun to listen to. Yeah. But that's like its big draw, and I think Night in the Woods has that same thing going forward, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that, and then Axiom Verge is really fun. It's a competent Metroid knockoff.
Yeah, I played that one on PS4, I think. Very impressive because it's another situation where one person developed the entire game. I love the art in the game. I never finished it. I wasn't like compelled to see through it.
I was playing on a plane, so I got really far with nothing else to do, and it was fun. But I also played Luminous in your recommendation, and I love it. I'm bad at it. Yeah. Just very bad. I need to learn, like, what does every block combination mean to me? And I just haven't figured it out yet.
And you hadn't played Luminance before?
Never. I thought I had until I played it, and I was like, ugh, I don't think I've played this before.
But you played Meteos.
Oh, yeah, I love Meteos.
Yes,
so now, how do you think of Luminous compared to Meteos?
Well, I barely even remember playing Meteos now. That was 10 years ago or something, right?
Meteos' fatal flaw is that you can just go,
Can you really?
You'll play everything. So much better than if
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's great.
You can just rub the stylus all over the screen. You score all the points.
Wow. Yeah, because it is just about touching to kind of explode certain blocks. That's funny.
The music of Luminous has been stuck in my head since I've been playing.
Oh, yeah.
It's here. World of Silence. Silence.
Yeah, I heard that a lot.
Shake your body down to the ground.
Yeah.
My fiance came in the room as I was playing, and she said, is a robot singing? And I said, yes.
Yes, a robot is singing.
It thematically changes with the music, too, and some of the color schemes are like, ooh. So
they're creepy.
Really nice.
Yeah. And then, like, sometimes the music, I don't know if it's deliberate, but some of the remixes, some of the songs I actually find kind of grating and annoying, and I don't like them, but then, you know, the time signature also makes it more challenging to get through, and I think it's deliberate. I think the game is sort of taking you on a musical journey.
I was wondering. So it doesn't just get faster and faster as you keep playing, right?
Sometimes it slows way down. Yeah, it goes up and down. And so I think they deliberately give you a couple breather ones after a really hard one with more, you know, melodic sounds. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Have you made it to level 100?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I made it to level 100 the first. I mean, I know that game is in my blood. Like,
are there I don't know what's added in this game, but there's like a puzzle mode where it's like draw a dog, like stuff like that.
Yep.
It's really hard. It's fun.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Or it'll be like, do this in two moves. And that's the tutorial doesn't teach you anything. So that mode has been teaching me more about how you're supposed to play that game. Because it'll be like, you know, eliminate these blocks in one move. Yep. And you really have to learn, like, oh, this idea. It's harder than you think for me.
Yeah.
And Ryan, you've also been playing Luminous?
I've been playing Luminous. Yeah. I'm not great at it, but I love getting, I'm probably 5 songs in or whatever it is. But I had played it before as Luminous Live on Xbox.
On Xbox. That's where I had played it before.
Yeah. Is that a competitive version? Or is it just that's what
I think because it was on Xbox Live.
I'm trying to remember what was different about it. I owned and played that one too, but now I can't recall if it had some special I don't know. Or if
I feel
it was
like
just
some
a
of the
port.
Music was different potentially.
Yeah,
the music, I'm not sure.
I don't recognize a lot of the music, so yeah, I think it was different. Yeah. But that was good. That was a good version too.
Wasn't it a big like PlayStation exclusive on PSP?
It was a big PSP game.
For PSP, right?
Has it only been
surprising
on
surprising that it's on Xbox and Switch now, right?
There was a mobile version.
That's fairly recent though, right?
I don't know.
I think that one's fairly recent.
Does it work okay?
Nobody
did you ever try it?
No, I never did.
You would want buttons for that game.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah,
for the rotating. And And then they probably put out a version on Vita at some point.
No one knows.
Ryan, are we playing anything else besides Luminous?
I beat Yoku's Island Express.
Oh, there you go.
Ooh. That's really, really enjoyed that. And actually, as the credits rolled, the app crashed on my Switch.
Oh, no.
But I tweeted it out. I was like, look, I took a screenshot. I definitely did it, right?
The music's really good, huh?
Did you give did you give the dragon snake the good mushroom or the poison mushroom?
Well, I encountered him twice.
Yeah. You killed
him. So that means you gave him the good mushroom.
That's the only
so
way.
So the second time I was like, I don't have any other mushrooms.
Yeah,
that's a really good one.
Yeah, and then it's that, and then weirdly, I've been dipping into Ghost Recon Wildlands. I'm playing that co-op with my brothers. Mm. It's kind of it's all over the map in terms of, you know, it's one of those Ubisoft icons on a map, go around, just check things off type of game. But when you're playing co-op and you're having conversations, it's almost meditative or something in a way that is enjoyable.
There's an underrated just pleasure in a game where you can just sort of turn your brain off. That was Destiny for me. Just like turn your brain off and play with your friends. And it's like 60% playing the game, but it's like 40% just catching up with people that maybe you don't see in real life very often. Yeah, cool. And just sort of a social element to it.
Yeah.
That was how I played Destiny.
I've been playing a lot of Lumines. I've been playing that super obscure Neo Geo puzzle game, Money Puzzle Exchanger.
That was the most gamey that
I had never played it before.
Is it a Puyo game?
It's like that. It's another one of those.
And it has the money in each circle?
It's Japanese money. It's every yen coin. So there's one, five, 10, 50, 100, and 500 yen coins. And you have to match them up and clear the screen. And if you get combos, you'll send junk over to the other side.
Mm-hmm. I want
to
see. Bring your Switch in tomorrow. I want to see.
Okay. Yeah, I'll bring it in.
Does it have like really obnoxious callouts? Like, meow, meow.
It's cute anime girls, you know, behind you talking the whole time. Oh, actually, their animation is pretty good. I'm sorry. But yeah, that's the game that I wasn't aware of before.
Is it
but
based on a license, you think?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it's just anime girls.
Yeah.
Okay.
To be fair, if you had read Money Puzzle Exchanger in that list of 20 Switch games,
I would have been like, you're right.
Except you know that it's good because it's like $45.
No, it's only $7. They're all like, well, which
one of the really expensive
Wasn't there
ones?
One really expensive one where you're like, no one's going to buy this?
Yes, and I don't remember.
It was a shooter, a top-down shooter.
Maybe it wasn't like.
It wasn't Dodonpachi, was it? It was something.
That's not on Switch. I can't remember which one it was. But like,
I know when Square was porting stuff to iOS and it was like
$20?
$20. People were like, how is this possible?
Fancy tactics.
I mean, it's not crazy. Yeah.
They still do that. Like the Dragon Quest games are still like, the Drakway games are still like $16.
Drakway.
Sure, they sell them.
And I'm also playing the new Far Cry 5 DLC, but that's for review. That's out next week, so look for my review.
Oh, you got that way ahead, huh?
Tuesday, yeah. They gave it to us ahead of time. Which is
that the Vietnam one?
That one already came out. This is the Mars one, the Aliens one.
Weird.
Cool.
Please be excited.
Yeah.
And Justin, I know you haven't been playing a lot. However,
yeah,
you're a bachelor right now.
Yeah, I
have plenty of time to play tonight.
So I've been on vacation, and how it worked is I came back from vacation early, but the rest of my family is still there because, you know, I had to come back and work. So my wife and I figured out that this is the longest we've ever been apart.
What?
This trip right now.
We're apart right now.
Yeah.
Because when did she come back?
Like, not for a while, for like a couple weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think I need to pick, like, I'm almost feeling the pressure of, like, I got to pick the right game. I got to spend.
Don't you think it's just WoW? Are you going to go back to WoW?
Dude, if I did.
You're
not
going to play Gloomhaven the whole time?
I may get out Gloomhaven. I'm looking forward to two things. So, the nerdiest thing about me in my life is that I play and set up board games by myself. And, like, I'll cop to it. It's a thing that I do and I enjoy. But at the end of the night, I have to pack them all up and tuck them back away on
now
the couch.
Leave it out.
I'm
come out in the morning,
get a morning beer, and just go back to gloom.
Yeah. is your cat just gonna mess that all up?
Nah, the cat doesn't get on the table.
You don't even need to put on pants to play that.
I know. And so the two things that I'm most excited about are, yeah, I will almost certainly take over our entire big gigantic kitchen table with probably a couple of different board games and just switch off between them. I'm gonna stop coming into work. But then I'll pick like some game that I don't know what it's gonna be yet, but
could be Captain Toad.
Well, but I want like a big, like, I never finished Final Fantasy 15. And so I'm going to pick something like Octopath doesn't really appeal to me, but I'll pick some like bigger in scope game that just I can't fit it into my life anymore. And I'll try to blast through that before the fam comes back.
Now I want to think what that could be because you played God of War.
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 5, did you do that?
I didn't like Metal Gear that much.
Witcher 3?
I tried The Witcher a few different times and I made it to Skellige and gave up.
Oh, yeah. You made it far enough.
I think.
What about the second, the more recent Deus Ex? Did you play that one?
I started.
Mankind Divided.
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
It's good.
Maybe we'll put it to the audience. You made a face with Final Fantasy, but like I don't know, I played 4 hours of that game and really enjoyed it. And
it's been fixed now.
Exactly. Like that's the part that really intrigues me is like all the stuff that people are like, I don't know, it becomes a slog at this point.
Yeah.
Like they've supposedly fixed it.
Yeah,
now,
maybe.
So.
I played like 20 hours and I only made the face because I feel like that's enough. Like,
sure, fair enough.
Got everything I needed out of that game. But yeah, they have made updates to it. So.
And realistically, I have all these grand plans. I'm just going to get Domino's pizza and just probably do nothing at all.
Yeah, there's Domino's right up the road from you. So
yeah.
You're good to go.
You have to catch up on RoboCop games because you're moving to Detroit.
Yeah, I got to know about all of the OCP working so I can navigate.
Mm-hmm. You heard the RoboCop news this week?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did. I couldn't believe it.
So on one hand, I think it's good news. Mm-hmm. But there's something deeply disturbing to me about this news. They're ignoring all the other sequels after RoboCop 1.
Yeah,
and RoboCop 2 is really good.
This is a direct sequel to RoboCop 1.
Yeah, this is
interesting.
It's RoboCop also like, 2 was directed by the same man who directed Empire Strikes Back.
Lawrence Kasdan?
I like RoboCop 2 a lot.
Irving Kirshner.
Oh, Lawrence Kasdan wrote Empire.
Screenwriter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, it's Neil Blomkamp, right?
Yeah, from District 9.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's kind of another little...
Well, it's like, it's an amazing talent. He's like such a fit for RoboCop. Like, he's the right guy to be doing it, but it's also like, I'd almost rather him be doing something new. Well, like
people didn't like Chappie. I didn't see Chappie. But people, it's a joke now.
Yeah, and Elysium.
Yeah, it's like a joke on
Elysium
on
was
the
also
internet.
Bad.
I don't know why.
I didn't watch Chappie because I'm positive that movie's gonna make me sad. sad. Like it's honestly, God, I see it on Netflix and like I like sci-fi movies. I like all that stuff, but I'm like, I'm gonna be so sad about what happens to this robot. Mm. I can't watch it.
Yeah. Same with RoboCop.
It's
just
it's supposed to be sappy and sentimental. Like it's too much. It's not like
okay.
If someone please if you spoil the movie for me I will block you. Someone let me know if that movie just has a happy ending or not. And that's all you need to say.
Just tweet an emoji at Justin.
So this robot cop though, it was in a lot of video games.
A lot?
Including 3 on NES. 3 on NES.
Hold on. I don't think that's true because they didn't do a RoboCop 2 game.
Damon, it's true. There's RoboCop 1, 2 and 3. They're all separate cartridges.
But is RoboCop
I know that you are an expert in this field. I have no memory of any RoboCop 2 on the NES is the problem.
Oh, it's dumb.
Do you own it?
I have 1, 2, and 3. I'll bring them all in tomorrow. We'll play the whole trilogy.
Okay.
Sam, it's really about one game on SNES, RoboCop versus the Terminator.
That exists?
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, your arm perpetually out.
That's right. I don't remember that RoboCop. Who won?
I don't think anybody would.
It was a good Dark Horse comic series, RoboCop versus Terminator.
So RoboCop, Alien, Predator, and Terminator are all part of the same universe.
Pretty much.
In the 90s.
Pretty much.
But not anymore.
In the 90s. They should do a RoboCop versus Terminator versus Alien versus Predator.
That's the Avengers we deserve.
Ooh, I really like it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so stupid.
Maybe this is the start of that universe.
Friday is shaping up to really fun here, because we're going to play Money Puzzle Exchanger and RoboCop 1, 2, and 3.
I'll make a note for myself.
Fridays. I like the original Data East RoboCop arcade game.
Yeah, what's that like?
I like that one.
It's just brawler?
I can't picture it.
Beat it's a up? Side-scrolling shoot 'em up brawler, but like,
it's good graphics, right?
Yeah, good graphics. And RoboCop has a really good weight to him. He can punch the thugs. It's a lot like...
That never ends up in those Data East reissues.
Probably can't.
Probably the licensing, yeah.
Dude, it's like the Capcom Alien brawler. That game's so good, the arcade brawler.
It's
like
just called
really
Aliens.
Good pixel art in that game.
There's also an Alien versus Predator one. I don't know if Capcom did that one, but I think it's just Aliens, the Capcom game. It's really good.
Yep.
GameScoop is sponsored by Gamefly, the best way to buy and rent your favorite games. Gamefly.com gives you access to 9,000 titles, which are mailed directly to your door. For one monthly fee, you can play the latest and greatest games for as long as you want with no late fees or due dates, ever. When you get tired of a game, all you have to do is mail it back, and they'll send you the next title on your list. Today, every Scoop listener gets access to a free premium 30-day trial by going to Gamefly.com/Scoop. That premium trial lets you rent two titles at the same time, and you get it by going to Gamefly.com/SCOOP. Gamefly.com/Scoop. Check it out.
Let's check in with listeners.
R.I.P.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Aaron from Dallas did.
Is it Aaron with a E?
Nope.
Two A's.
I got it.
Double A Aaron. He says, as a graduate student with little time, I have recently started playing much shorter games. I played through Celeste, which I absolutely loved. I didn't think I was a fan of super difficult games, but Celeste was different. It never felt like a chore due to combining that high difficulty with checkpoints on each screen. So after enjoying the game so much, I decided I want to go on a platformer binge, and I picked up the Mega Man Legacy Collection for Switch.
Ooh.
With that game's high quality, despite the game's high quality, I didn't enjoy them as much in their native form due to how the game doesn't seem to take my time seriously during the castle and boss rush portion at the near the end.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, I resorted to saving each castle level and every two bosses, which seemed like a good balance of difficulty and time saving.
That's a lot of self-restraint for a game that has rewind.
I would save state every 3 seconds
after every
hit. It just seems
hit.
Archaic to have to play through a 30 to 45 minute sequence and have to start all over if I miss a jump near the end. As people who actually grew up during this era, how do you all play old games when you go back to them now? Do you do it like I do, or do you actually play them how they were initially meant? Yeah, Aaron, I think we play them. We take advantage, even more advantage of the safe states and rewind features than you seem to.
We also cheated like hell back then with Game
Genie. Whenever we could. Mm-hmm. Whatever codes, classified information.
Whatever came in classified information. Exactly. And Game Genie was
like,
great.
I never played Contra or Life Force without using the Konami code.
No, it's not even balanced for that. Why would you even play it that way?
Yeah.
But I really like how those features augment games now because it gives you a reason not to emulate or you know, whatever. No, trust me. I love original systems, original controller, CRT television. There's a reason to do that. It's my favorite way to play
games. You have one on your desk.
But revisiting these is really fun, especially when they're bad games, to still get through them and see, like, maybe there's a really cool ending or a really cool cutscene or something, but it's a bad game and you still get to see what happens. Well, the later bosses in Mega Man 4, for instance, that's a bad game.
If the alternative is to never play the game at all or never see the latter half of
it, or not have as much fun with it.
Like, surely it's a lesser, not even to characterize it as evil, but it's a lesser of two evils to sort of cheat your way through it so at least you get to have some appreciation for it. Like, I'd never seen the second half of Battletoads until I went through it in a Rare Replay and took complete advantage of the rewinding, and it made that so much more fun and let me sort of enjoy this memory that I had from my youth. And
they really built out the end of that game. It's cool to see. There's like a bunch of crazy stuff that happens.
Is that Crazy Snake level?
Yeah, where you're going around on the wheels.
And they did crazy stuff on the NES with the 3D effect going around that.
The column, the tower or whatever. That looks really cool.
I cheat like hell when I replay those games.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we've said this many times on the show before. Like, you don't owe the game anything.
No.
You've purchased the game for your own enjoyment, so however way to play it that gives you the most enjoyment, that's the right
way.
They
also, that difficulty is what made games feel like big, epic, meaty adventures. Like, if you were to play through Castlevania 1, 2, or 3,
they're like a half hour long.
It's probably a 25-minute game, right?
You just ran through from beginning to end with never dying?
Like Ghosts and Goblins, but like it took you weeks and weeks and weeks as a kid and felt like this big adventure because of its difficulty. The difficulty was replay value.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had talked to Sam a little bit about it and ended up buying an analog Super NT.
Yeah.
And I'm actually buying cartridges and putting them in. Nice. And I'm loving the game experiences, and I feel like I'm getting, you know, as close to sound and visually accurate as I can get in being practical. But man, I miss save states.
Yeah, like, the games are hard.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, couldn't you just add in the save state thing?
Yeah.
I know they have cheats and stuff.
The whole thing
built
with the Super NT is they want it to be as accurate as possible.
And like, honestly, back in the day, like, there were good games that were not annoying, and then that's why we all liked them. I mean, Chrono Trigger is not a difficult game. It's meaty for its own reason. It's worth playing still. It's really fun. Or ActRaiser. You know, there's plenty of games that didn't extend their gameplay by being cheap.
Mario 3.
But then there's plenty that were cheap.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think I've ever beaten Mario 1. I beat Mario 3.
Mario 1 is really difficult to beat. It just is. Like, everything's easy until World 8, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Well, I also
8, 2,
don't
3, 4 suck.
I made it to the maze, the final maze in 8, 4. Mm-hmm. And, like, what's the difference between making it to that maze and not finishing and making it to that maze and finishing? Like, congratulations. Like, that's it. Like, I don't feel like I experienced the whole thing, and I don't feel like I'm missing anything by having not made it to the final screen.
You do get to see Bowser throw a lot of hammers.
Yeah.
He has this whole stream of hammers. It's really funny.
Have you beaten Mario 2?
That's the easiest one to beat.
I mean, I don't have a specific memory of it. I know I've seen the ending, and I'm aware of what happens.
No spoilers here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except for Yoku's.
Wart does not like vegetables. We'll give you that tip.
Have you ever
Dongo dislikes smoke.
Have you ever beaten Mario Brothers?
I don't think he...
It doesn't
know
end.
Probably not beatable.
I don't know if it has a kill screen either. And it probably has 90 end levels and goes back to one again.
So Ryan, you're buying up SNES cartridges.
I am.
What have you gotten? Yeah, what have you gotten recently? Do you have Mega Man X?
I got it, Mega Man X. Right. Yeah, and I have Chrono Trigger, and I got actually through eBay. I got a fake Chrono Trigger, and then got a real Chrono Trigger.
No,
returned the fake one, or did you keep them both?
I kept them both because I wanted to like reference, so I knew what was the not real.
Can you give some tips?
Yeah, I would say, don't be afraid to open up a cartridge, especially if like you buy it from someone. Get yourself
special,
one of those, special screwdrivers. Open
it just
it
opens
up.
Right up. It's like screw, 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 and then it just pops up.
Yeah, and there are websites like, I think it's SNES PCB, with computer printed circuit board.
But the labels are usually printed poorly.
Yes.
The color of gray is
sharp.
Off.
Yeah.
The actual label on the back, it is of an era. And then the shape of the cartridge is enough of an era.
Yep.
So if you don't have one with the scoop and it's Chrono Trigger, then that's the wrong cartridge. Like, there's all kinds of stuff.
Some have stickers on the back. Some have hard kind of printed the sort of details of copyright stuff
but
on the back.
It's expensive now, right? It's like $50 for the cartridge, like a real one.
Yeah. Yeah. Chrono Trigger cost me $100.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard for me to keep up. So, yeah, there you go. And so then you can also tell if somebody has a buy it now for $44.99.
Right.
That's fake.
Mm hmm.
But should it matter whether it's fake or not? I mean, it's,
I keep
that's the philosophical
that.
Question of like, you got Chrono Trigger on a cart, and Nintendo and Square Enix aren't getting a dollar from that secondhand purchase anyway.
Come back
so.
To me when it's mint in box.
So I know the
box.
I know. Obviously, it is immoral to be printing up and selling people fake games and passing them off as real. But just the thought experiment of who is being harmed where Square doesn't get a dollar and Nintendo doesn't get a dollar. So I'm trying to like, I'd like someone, you know, with a degree in ethics or something to like walk me through just like just what it matters if you're getting a real or a fake.
Yeah, and it's that question of software, right? If it's an exact copy, it looks and plays
playing
in
on
yeah,
the right hardware.
Playing on the right hardware, like, is it the real thing? And that's always what I come back to. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I say no, I think.
I do as well, but it's tricky.
Yeah.
What if you get halfway through the game and then the back half of the game is just like everybody has pizza?
Yeah, just a new, that Mario sort of Mario face
like
turtle.
Like the copy protection in Earthbound.
Yeah.
If that game could sense, I don't actually know how it's sensing it or how it's tracking it, but if you were playing a pirated copy of Earthbound or it knew it wasn't an authentic copy of Earthbound, the random encounter rate was much, much, much higher. You were getting in combat every few steps, and then the game freezes at the final boss and resets your save.
Wow.
That's really smart. But like you, I have no idea how that worked back then.
Yeah, I'm not positive.
I think the idea was that if you played it on a fake Super Nintendo, not if an cartridge is fake.
Maybe that was it.
I think that's what it is, because I've seen a kill screen that Donkey Kong throws up, Donkey Kong Country, where if you're playing on like a weird system and you maybe have it like rattle around a little bit too much in the system, like a contemporary system, it'll throw up the screen. It's a blue screen with a Nintendo logo. And it says, you're playing an unauthorized copy of Donkey Kong Country.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's pretty neat.
All right. This is Justin from Idaho.
Oh, close.
Cesaro Justin.
Close.
Says, I've been listening to your podcast for several months now, and I thoroughly enjoy them. I have a question that I would like to ask everyone at Camp Goose. Next month, my wife and I will be moving into a house, and we will have much more space than we do at our apartment. My wife has given the okay that I can use the downstairs room as a gaming room.
Yeah.
I am filled with excitement as one of my lifelong dreams of having a room designated for gaming is about to come true. So what I would like to know from you guys is, what does my game room need to make it Camp Goose approved? I already have a collection of amiibo to set up on a shelf, as well as some posters.
To start?
I think he needs a beanbag chair.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Really?
First thing I was going to go for. In the basement, in your rumpus room? Okay. All beanbag chairs.
Yeah, you got to have beanbag chairs.
No real chairs.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go so far with this. If you're going to play retro games, have a cool cabinet set up with your consoles where you can see each one, like one of those IKEA cubes.
You need to start collecting these retro consoles, have them on display.
And then you can wire them behind the shelf so they all look really
get
nice.
Get it all wired up so you don't have to be faffing about back there when you need to swap one console.
And you can get
another.
Things like crazy RCA switchers to make that easy. And then if you want to go nuts, I would say don't get a projector. Always get a TV. And
except you need two TVs.
Someone's leaving us a message.
I know. All right, we're gonna try and stop hitting mic stands with our feet.
All right.
Apologize.
No deal.
Apologies if you guys.
No deal, producers.
Kick it even harder.
Try to stop me.
Yeah, you need a big, like, nice flat screen TV, and you need a CRT.
Maybe wire up an old TV if you have CRT. The room. You have a whole basement and
that
a
way you
space.
Can,
Do you think
it'll
we're
look
like,
really nice?
Do you think we're like how many years away are we from someone manufacturing new CRT TVs like record players?
There's gonna be a demand for it, but I don't even know. Do they have the components to make them?
The thing that we don't think about is that what if you could make that so close to what a CRT looks like with contemporary parts, like, you know, just like a nice shell over some kind of LED display that did it just right.
Like a bendable OLED or something to give you that curve.
That gets really close to that. Like, that's probably where we'll get before we get
but
to the
But it's not the curvature,
TV.
Right? Isn't it like the refresh
it's,
rate?
It's,
and
I think it's all kinds of stuff.
Not refresh
absolutely.
Rate, but
it's
like,
all that. Scan lines.
Yeah, you need the scan.
It's just how it's built. But you can imitate that with really small pixels, like an iPhone. You know, blown up. Like, you could do all this. But who knows whether that'll happen before we get back to basically what is a giant vacuum tube.
Interesting.
One of the things
the
I think...
They do emulated scan lines now. Doesn't the analog do it? Or yeah, is it the other one?
They just add like kind of like gray, crappy lines.
Yeah.
I don't understand the appeal of scan lines.
Well, certain sprites, though, sprite work was made to, like, they knew that it was going to be fuzzed out on a TV screen.
Well, that's exactly right. I really get behind that.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Ryan?
Go ahead.
I was thinking one of the things you should do, I've got these in my house, and I love them, the Philips Hue, get some lights.
Behind the TV? Is that one?
Well, you can put them behind the TV, but also, if you have a couple lamps, you can set it up, and there's apps where you can upload a screenshot from a game and actually like use that game's colors. And so like you can really immerse yourself right in your own space.
That's cool. And ambient lighting, don't write it off or don't assume it's like, it's a cheap and easy way to really add a lot of personality to, you know, sort of a downstairs space like that.
Mm-hmm. Got to have a mini fridge.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to go all the way back upstairs to get another beer.
And
you could have a mini toilet.
Don't get one of those cocktail machines with 16-1 in it. Those are cheap and they're bootlegs and they're awful.
But you could get a real cocktail table of a real game.
Just get Frogger or something.
Get Miss Pac-Man.
Those are really nice to sit around and have beers.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I miss being in an apartment now is that I don't have a desk to do PC gaming. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked about GameScoop many times. I did build a gaming PC and I really, really like it. But it's plugged into my TV in my living room, which, I've tried like lap boards and stuff like that, but it basically closes the door to like,
Games.
Yeah, RTS games, Roller Coaster Tycoon, Civ. It makes any mouse and keyboard heavy game pretty challenging. So if I had a gaming space of my own, I would probably want to make sure that it was PC gaming friendly and ready as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Benny, if you're interested in PC gaming, for sure. He mentions he has some posters for decoration. Every Nintendo Power used to come with a poster.
Yeah, they're all good, too.
They're all good. They're all available on eBay. You can get them for like $5.
Yeah,
$8 maybe, yeah. Those would be really good. And then also old arcade marquees are really cool.
Those good are for good decoration. To hang up. Yeah, I like that.
Thank you. I think Justin from Idaho's got a good game room going here.
Maybe a nice VCR collection.
Yeah, VCR.
You need a shelf with a bunch of board games you don't play in your basement.
If you have the CRT TV, get a VCR.
You can tape TV for free.
Get a copy of Die Hard, Friday the 13th, Part 7.
Mm-hmm. Really
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Forrest Gump.
RoboCops 1 through 3.
Apollo 13.
Just 1 and 2. And then when you have your game room set up, Justin from Idaho, send us a photo. And we will judge it. This is Matt. He says, how does everyone feel about playthrough videos? Do you think it helps or hurts video games? I've watched playthroughs of The Last of Us and Detroit Become Human because I do not own a PlayStation. And it's also something you can have going on in the background, like while cooking. Love to hear your viewpoints. So playthrough videos, like on YouTube, of just a full playthrough of a game.
Yeah. Long plays.
I'm of two minds. One is that it's actually, I value having archival footage of games. Like, Sam, how often do you and I talk about an old game? We go to YouTube to look at it. Like,
we looked at Predator for NES the other day. Never seen that game before.
NES, that game's wild.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. I love that there is footage of all these old games that we can use to reference. So in that sense, I think it's very valuable. But personally, I've never just like sat down and watched a playthrough of a modern game myself. That's not something that I'm interested in doing.
I mean, if you don't have the console and you are interested in talking with your friends about it, it sounds like a great idea. I've never been in that situation, and I just have no perspective on why you'd want to watch a game instead of play it.
I mean, it's complicated and complex, right? Like, if you think about a game like Oxenfree, I think you gain very, very little by controlling the inputs yourself versus watching that game you played.
If the whole draw is to experience the dialogue and the conversations, well, you can do that from the...
I mean,
video.
You can't choose the dialogue in that game.
If you had a narrative focused game that's, you know, fairly short and it didn't meet your sales expectations, and you go onto YouTube and see that a million people watched through the whole game being played,
that's
never going to feel good. But it strikes me as a similar argument of like music piracy, where when they dig into the data and the research, it actually turns out that the most pirated music was also the best selling music, and exposing people to here's how my game looks and feels and everything you need to know about it. Like, the more you sort of give people, the more you end up getting back in, you know, revenue and attention and money. So I don't know. I think it's complicated.
What about the annoying people playing those games? That's the problem.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, I don't like it when people
One of my favorite YouTube channels is World of Long Plays, where it's just we're not going to skip anything. We're not going to take any shortcuts. Exactly. We're going to go through all the dialogue, and there's no speaking. The game, but it's very much archival. Like, it's just there for like the archival purposes.
I don't know what it is. Something about every time I'm like trying to like figure out how to do something in a game and I resort to looking up a playthrough video on YouTube, they're always really annoying.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
But, you know, the other thing for me is that, like, I love video games and I love playing them, but I also want to watch stuff on, like, on Netflix and on HBO and stuff. Yeah. And, like, those things, you know, you get your parents' account and... Well, you have access to those too, and I don't see why you'd want to spend the time doing that unless, again, maybe all your friends are playing and you want to participate in that. That I understand that.
Well, this is also like a very specific thing where the two games were The Last of Us and Detroit, right?
Yeah.
So these are two console exclusives.
So he didn't have a PS4.
Yeah, and it becomes a situation where, like, I'm sure some part of having a console exclusive is, hey, come buy our console. Mm-hmm. So in that way, somebody just consuming it is kind of negating that factor. But, you know, if I was a 10-year-old, even 20-year-old guy, and I did not have the money to spend $400 on a PlayStation, I would probably do it.
It's hard to say. I mean, that's a rationalization of, you know, 12-year-old pirates everywhere. Not that someone watching a YouTube video is a pirate, but people that are, like, you know, pirating comic books or whatever, it's like, well, I wasn't going to buy it. Yeah. Like, you know, so it didn't cost, you know, DC Comics $4 because I was never going to spend $4 on your comic. But then it's like, well, then you don't get to read it. Like, that's right.
It's hard to tell.
You're not entitled to it, you know.
Yeah, if that person ends up, like, becoming a PlayStation fan or getting the next PlayStation to play the sequels to those, then it's a little bit different. But
yeah, that's
are you creating a fan?
That's exactly sort of the tension here in my own mind is like, well, if it wasn't an option to just watch a whole playthrough of Detroit, maybe you're a little bit more likely to be a PS4 because if you want to experience that game, you have to buy the PS4 in the game and play it. Mm. But the flip side is, you know, that surely videos like that must help sell consoles and games too.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know people don't like when I say this, but I don't think games are good at telling stories. And that's not why I play games. I think they're bad at it. And movies are really good at it. And books are really good at it. They just have been forever. So when I hear, it's a little painful for me to hear, like, well, just watch Detroit for the story. Because, like, even at the best top of its game with a great game, it's still, like, you know, not going to be as good as Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. Just watch that.
It's true.
Like, it's the same theme. It's written, like, for you to watch it. And it's great, you know? Or what was that great Netflix cyborg show?
Altered Carbon.
Altered Carbon. Like, what a fantastic 12 hours that was.
Yeah.
Why do I need to watch Detroit?
Fantastic 8 hours or so, and then four. Maybe so hours.
It's true.
Overall good, though.
Yeah. And then Last of Us, you know, like, there's a lot of zombie fiction out there. Reading The Walking Dead is like an experience that I don't think is replaceable.
Yeah.
I think the first 50 issues of Walking Dead is so awesome. And I recommend you go do that. You know, spend the time. Go do that and play whatever games you can play later.
It's true that video game stories have gotten a lot better.
Sure.
Over the years. But even like the best video game story today, you know, is like not on par with the best movie.
And it's still a good reason. If you like it, it's still a good reason for you to play games. If you want to play games for the stories, more power to you. It's not why I play them.
I'm a systems guy.
Systems? Yeah, you like the systems, right? Learning the systems. And
that's why I play role-playing games. Like, that's why it's so funny. Like, that's not what I'm looking for in an RPG at all. I'm like, how do the systems all interact? And, you know, what's all the combat system all about? And, you know, party creation and customization. Yeah. I'm not paying any attention at all to who these characters are or who, you know, what their motivation is.
Like in Dragon Age, I remember just skipping dialogue eventually, just being, oh my gosh. But I got really good at it in Mass Effect, which I like the stories in Mass Effect because they're all based on my favorite sci-fi stories. But I liked, you could skip just enough of the dialogue to get through it. And really, your eyes flash over the text.
Yep.
You get in that like kind of pattern where you get it all.
Yeah. Like Genophage, it's fine. They're all dying. Don't worry about it.
I remember like friends or my wife over, they'd be like watching me play. They'd be like, are you taking this in? I'd be like, yes.
It's sort
of. I got it.
All right, and that brings us to video game 20 questions. Ryan, do you know how this works?
I do.
Okay, good. Then we don't have to play through the tutorial then. Our suggestion this week comes from Spencer Sullivan. Let the questioning begin.
Okay. Does your character wear a hat?
I don't think so. I'm not sure you ever. I'm not sure you ever actually see yourself, but there'd be no reason.
You're giving us way too much information.
There'd be no reason for you to wear a hat.
There'd be no reason for you to. What if it's a chilly day? I don't know.
Sounds like it's a game starring a polar bear.
Yeah.
There'd be no reason. Okay.
It's a really funny answer, Damon.
Does this game have a military theme?
No. Good question.
Is this game from before the year 2000?
Yes.
All right. Is it from before the year 1990?
No.
Okay.
90s game. This is your era.
Is this a console exclusive?
Yes. Well, at the original time of release.
Okay. Is it a Super Nintendo exclusive?
No.
I maybe should have done.
No, it's fine.
Console manufacturer first.
Is this a 16-bit game?
It's a gray area.
Is it a TurboGrafx game?
Okay, so how about, what can we go with? Was this released on cartridge?
No.
Interesting.
What does that mean? Sega CD?
PlayStation.
Could it be?
Yeah, but PlayStation's 32-bit.
Well, maybe he didn't know that, though.
Okay.
PC wouldn't count in the console
exclusives.
For the record,
I knew PlayStation was 32-bit.
No one knows what a bit is, anyway.
Well, like, used to mean everything.
What could it be? I mean, that's an
how many bits is an Xbox One? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, seriously, I think everything ended up being 64-bit after some point.
Right?
Is that right?
I don't know.
Okay, so we have a console exclusive.
Not cartridge based.
It's not on a cartridge.
So you were starting to ask about PC. I think it probably means Sega CD or PC
shareware.
If it's Sega CD, we're in trouble.
I loved my Sega CD.
Yeah. Can we just ask? Is this on a disc based CD based medium?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Is this game developed in Japan?
I don't think so.
What are you doing to us, Damon?
Was this a Sega CD game?
Yes.
All right. I know what it is. It's Night Trap.
Does a ski mask count as... Who are you in Night Trap?
That's right, because you can't see yourself.
Well, you're watching the security footage and trying to rescue all the girls, mm-hmm. but I don't understand...
But I think you're a police officer, so you definitely have a hat.
Yeah, you'd have a reason to wear a hat. Anyway.
You'd have a reason to wear a hat. Was this game controversial?
There's so many reasons to wear a hat. Keep the sun out of your eyes. Fashion.
Mm-hmm. You asking, was this game controversial? Yes.
Okay. Was it a...
It'd be Sewer Shark.
I love Sewer Shark, dude.
3, 6, 9.
Okay. Was this a FMV game?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, it could be DJ Jazzy Jeff's game.
It's not.
The Marky Mark game.
It could be Desert Bus.
Desert Bus, yeah. Penn and Teller.
God.
Jurassic Park at FMV.
What is Desert Bus?
It's actually Desert Bus is not the game. It's a game. So Penn and Teller released this game.
No, it was unreleased. It never came out.
I think it did.
But it's complete, though. It was a Lost Levels game.
Okay,
Rakes
Faldi. So Penn and Teller had a video game that was like 8 video games in one, but they were all like prank games and joke games. And one was this like game. It's like one-on-one versus, but you can mess with your opponent's controller and make their buttons do like random stuff. But the famous one is Desert Bus.
Tucson to Las Vegas,
but it's in real time, so it just takes you 8 hours
to
drive
there. And when you get to Vegas, you get 1 point. And here's the kicker. Your bus constantly pulls to the right.
Yeah, you can't take down your controller because the bus ever so slightly veers off to the right, so you have to actually be controlling it by hand.
Sounds brilliant.
I think it's an 8-hour drive, and at like 4 hour in, a bug splats on your screen.
Yeah.
And that's all that happens.
Is this Night Trap?
It is Night Trap.
Woo!
Right. Nice.
You got it.
I did almost nothing, and I get to retire with a 100%.
Yeah, I like the military question.
Yeah, there's a lot of military.
Can you explain the hat theory?
Because you're inside. Why? So I don't know. Why would you be wearing a hat?
Yeah, it's not that you were completely on solid ground where you're like, it's unknown if you wear a hat. But to say there's no reason to wear a hat.
Right.
Because you don't need any reason.
You're working. You're protecting.
You're in uniform.
These,
you need your hat.
Girls, and you're inside. So why would you be wearing a hat?
So can you explain the 32-bit thing?
I don't know what Sega CD is.
So we hired Jake.
16.
Jake's on my team. Sometimes he wears a beanie, and he's just wearing it just because he felt like putting it on that day. That's a good enough reason.
Let's be fair, Justin. There's no reason for him to be wearing it.
That's true. There's no reason for me. Do you ever see yourself in that game? Who you're supposed to be? I've never played.
I like the idea of at the end they turn it around and it's like a lady with blonde hair, like the end of Metroid.
Did you play Night Trap?
No, I've never played it.
Even though they re-released it last year, I've still never played it.
I think the what's the packaging that it just came out in?
Yeah.
Limited run games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming to Switch.
There's another one coming to Switch.
Yeah.
Get that. Send that to us, please.
Yeah. Limited run. Send that to us. Do you know who developed Night Trap?
I know about the development of it because it was made at the same time as Sewer Shark in like 87 for Laserdisc.
Yeah.
And
it
was ported
a
lot later.
It wasn't, well, it, the developer's I, called.
Wait, let me. Is it American Sammy? No, it's not American Sammy. Hmm.
They're called Digital Pictures.
I knew that. Digital Pictures.
But I don't know if that's the division of Sony or whatever. And so, I would assume they're not.
But
Japanese.
Sony games with the Sony logo, several of them came out on Sega CD, right up to the run up to the PS1.
Yeah, those are Sony games. That's
they were trying to get
game development. I'd like Tomcat Alley and some Sony games like that. Sony might have done Sewer Shark. No, that was Sega.
Nicely done, gentlemen. Nicely done, Ryan.
Did it.
We're so glad you could join us here.
Thank you guys so much.
On the eve of your departure, where can people check out your podcast?
It's at Playwright, WRITE, as you said, .com. And I'm just at Ryan Quintel on Twitter. You guys can find me.
Right. You're a big fan, a close friend of IGN, so I'm sure we'll be keeping in touch.
Thank you. Will you take a picture of us in front of the RoboCop statue?
Yeah, that's the least I can.
For us, I mean. Send it.
And dear listeners, next week I'm afraid we're going to have to take another week off because I have to go down to Comic-Con. I thought I was going to be able to avoid it this year, but they need me, so we have to take another week off. But I'm going to try to put something together for you on Monday or Tuesday, either an All 20 Questions episode or maybe a game scope.
Fun.
If we can work that in before I leave. I'll try to do that for you. But thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam.
Kaboom.
Thank you, Ryan. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Saw you across the room, eyes bright like a magic moon. We danced beside the sea, you move like a mystery, and we fell in love with everything, and we fell. To you, like songs and stories do. Your heart is a part of me, and we are sparkling, and we fell in love with everything, and we fell in love with everything, and we fell.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.